Hello, and welcome to Book Reviews Kill, a podcast about fantasy, sci-fi, and horror novels. I'm Chad.
And I'm Evan.
And you are listening to the Monday Morning Minute.
And this week in fictional news, House of the Dragon and Rings of Power have both released their trailers for their respective second seasons. Okay, I haven't watched either trailer. I'm not planning on it. I'm just going to go in blind.
Really? That's bold.
I don't want to. Well, because last time I got all hyped up, or I didn't get hyped up, and it was just, I have my opinions on both shows, so I'm just going to go into them with the opinions that I already have. I'll either, you know, I mean, House of the Dragon is probably going to be really good.
I feel like that's the same level of willpower as like walking through Costco and not getting the samples.
Kind of. Yeah, but
like, that's pretty impressive. You're a stalwart champion.
Okay, so my reasoning is like, House of the Dragon is probably going to be solid, so I'll just be pleasantly stoked to watch all of it. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And like, I know a decent amount of the lore too, and like, I don't know, it's just like, I don't want to be...
I have my faith.
Yeah, I know it's going to be good, but then with Rings of Power, it's like...
I mean, they also kind of have my faith.
Kind of.
Like, just in the fact that I know it'll be bad.
It's funny because like, through internet osmosis, I've kind of heard that Rings of Power 2 Season 2 is looking pretty cool, but of course... Movie trailers and TV show trailers can make anything look good.
Yes.
We were duped with the first trailer for the first season. Remember, like, us on the podcast, like, oh, it's got to be so cool.
And give me some Hobbit, like, flute and a little, like, flyover, like, you know, wide-angle lens shot. And I'm like, oh, yes, my nostalgic heart. And then...
I don't know, though. Maybe it's good. Maybe it'll be good.
Maybe.
I'm willing to be stoked and pleasantly surprised. At Rings of Power Season 2. I'm going to watch it for sure, but we are going to be doing weekly episodes for House of the Dragon, me and Chad and Effie, because Effie has now, since House of the Dragon came out, I finally convinced her to watch all of Game of Thrones and all of House of the Dragon Season 1, and so she's now officially a fan. She likes it all, and so she wants to talk about it with us, which I think would be super fun.
Dude, you're doing the Lord's work, Evan, really. I mean,
there's been a few times
that you've definitely come to the table on these Monday morning episodes and been like, so I made that mistake where I'm like, you've never seen Boondock Saints? And then, you know, you show her something that you loved when you were 14, and
I was
full-grown adult.
I knew that she would like it. There are parts of both House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones that are like, okay, we could probably just, if we're going to rewatch it, we could skip through this part.
Right, like 90 hours, there's going to be some redundant, boring things.
Yeah. Oh, and just some really gruesome, horrible things that it's like, we already know what this is, so let's just skip on over it. You know, there's specifically Season 1, Episode 1 of House of the Dragon, there is a scene towards the end where it's just like, ugh. It's like really hard to watch.
Is it the guy with his toys?
No, it's it. No. It's
the guy with his toys and his like biggest Lego set.
His Lego set.
If you guys don't know what we're talking about, he has this big like miniature, like very detailed, like of his castle, maybe some like
It's old Valyria, I think.
Of course, Evan knows it's old Valyria. Yeah, so he has his old Valyria table with all of his pieces on them, and he's like a bumbling oaf and basically gets like sliced by the throne all the time because he's a terrible king who just plays with toys.
I think it's a pretty cool king, personally. But
I think they portrayed him like they gave the guy no love. Like he can't be cool in any way. He's just like super lame through and through.
No, there's a scene with Viserys that's pretty badass.
And it's really
when he walks in with a mask on.
Oh yeah, okay.
You remember
that? I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited. I think it's gonna be cool.
Me too.
Also, speaking of TV, I think Arcane season 2 comes out this year as well. Kind of like in the fall. We got season 2. Of at least two really awesome shows, and maybe season 2 of a kind of okay show that might turn into a good show. So I'm pretty excited.
That's good news. I like the trailers. I've only not watched them while you were talking, out of like sheer utter respect for your discipline.
When I'm done, I guess.
Like, will there be links in the description beneath this episode? Maybe there will be.
I bet Chad watches them as soon as we're done recording.
Dude, definitely. Well, tell me about your week. What have you been up to? I feel like I've talked to you a bunch. I know the ins and outs of your every day.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot. Chad and I have been on the phone every day for the last few weeks, actually. Me just checking up on him and, you know, just us staying a little closer.
Dude, just friending.
Friending pretty hard. It's writing, man. Like, I wish that I had way cooler stuff going on to talk to everybody about that wasn't so repetitive. I got my edits back from tour And I am just full steam ahead on the edits. And I'm also in the middle of drafting book two and outlining book three. We came up with a name for the trilogy.
Can you tell me?
We're going to call it Rail and Ruin.
Ooh, very nice. Love the alliteration.
Yeah, which I think is pretty good. Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about it.
Is the rail, the rail's the drug, right?
Yeah, yeah. Which I don't want to spoil for anybody, but yeah, there is a drug element to all of these books that's very important. We landed on that, and then, like, I mean, I'm working on the edits all the time, and some of them are really granular, and it's just like, use a period instead of a comma here, you know, capitalize this letter instead of having it lowercase after the end of this dialogue tag, or what, just like small stuff like that. And then some of it's also like, didn't you already mention this like a few paragraphs above this? Like, it's redundant, go ahead and take this out. Or it's like, can you clarify this a little bit more? Maybe use simpler language here. There's a few parts where I'm like a little over descriptive. So my editor, Stephanie, was like, hey, you could probably like file a little bit of this down because you've got action on either side of this description. You want to like keep it a little bit more condensed.
Though redundancy isn't good, I will say I love me a good reminder, because sometimes I forget stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it depends.
You know, I love hearing stuff twice. Really gets it nailed in sometimes. I'm like, okay, that's important. The author has told me this twice now, or at least maybe I'll remember one of them.
Redundancy in the sense that, like, you just made this point, and now you're making it the same way, like a paragraph later. You know, it's like, I'll just forget that I already, or it's like, because of the nature of how I'm kind of like going in and kind of gutting some of these scenes and then putting them back together, I'll like forget that I didn't delete something. And it's, there's a lot of spots where it's like, you know, I use a IT apostrophe S for possessive it's, you know what I mean? And it's,
dude,
and it's,
man, all like the time.
Yeah.
My mom always gets it, and she always tells me, she's going to listen to this episode, I'm sure she's going to give me some eyebrows, but she always looks at the it's and tells me as if I don't know the right it for it, like you, I didn't make, know, a mistake. Yeah. Like I purposefully put it there, and I'm always like, I know the proper it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's all pretty small stuff. I mean, we're kind of far along enough. A lot of what it is like just sticking as close as I can to a limited POV. So like every now and then I'll kind of say something, it drifts a little bit away from Angie's POV in a sense that's like, it's not quite her voice. It's like I'm saying something like purely for the reader benefit that's like not really attached to Angie as much. So it's like stuff like that. Like my editor is really good at catching that kind of stuff. And it's all stuff that like the reader, you listening, you'll never see it. And you won't even notice that the paragraph you're reading, which reads pretty well, was actually a total disaster before it was edited. That's where I am with book two right now. And I'm pretty excited about it. I mean, as messy as book two is, I'm confident about it. I'm confident with the whole trilogy most of the time. Sometimes I'm like, I can't believe this is going to be a finished thing. And like, I just can't see it yet. You know what I mean?
Totally. But you have Angie to show yourself that you can do it.
Yeah, the first book is pretty cool. I'm really excited for everybody to read it.
Do you find yourself wishing you did a worse job on Angie so the bar isn't quite so high? Because, I mean, your career is going to be, you know, if you're like a computer programmer, you're going to probably hopefully write more elegant code, and it's going to be better each time you do it. But it's going to be so different in like the applications that you're writing for, like the function. It would be hard, I think, to compare your like growth maybe because the projects are so different. But you're going to be able to be like, man, everything I do, I'm going to be able to directly compare it to the last thing that I did. And, you know, I know you'll have fun with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just try to write as good of a story as I can.
Totally.
That's all I can really do. And I've had some ideas for like novellas and short stories and stuff that I've been kind of like picking at. And I don't know, I'm working on a lot of different stuff, but I'm also reading. I am a good amount of the way through Empire of Storms. Finally, we're getting back on our Throne of Glass kick.
Yeah, let me take it real fast. I want to apologize that we are not have an episode out, because I know you finished it. I'm almost done with mine.
Well, I'm almost finished. I have like 100 pages left, but yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Word. I'm pretty close, but I still have some work to do on it this week. So we will get an episode out probably this week, I would imagine. I'm really going to try anyway, but that's been my bad. So thank you everyone for your understanding. It means so much to me.
It's cool, man. I'm fine with like lowering the workload a little bit. We'll get it back up to where we had it before.
And it's not like the community around the podcast doesn't stop reading other things. Go into the Discord. Right, yeah. They all have book clubs and everyone's reading together. That's why I began the description for last week's episode, something along the lines of like, reading books is a thing that you do alone, but not so like everything besides, I think, going number two was what I said. Is better with someone else, you know. This really is true, so I can't plug it enough. There's just so many cool people in there. I like it a lot.
Empire of Storms, I feel like this one has a lot of like really cool twists and turns and a lot of action. It's not my favorite so far. I think it's like my second favorite so far. I like it a lot.
There's a lot of turns in it,
dude. Like, we're really building up here too. Like, I feel like Kingdom of Ash, the last book, is going to be pretty epic. If this is any indication. I'm excited to talk about the book with you, though, and kind of just finish up with Throne of Glass and then really start focusing on Malazan. That's kind of what I've got planned for the year. Apart from some interviews, speaking of interviews, I need to get back to a couple emails because we've got some authors that want to come on that all of you have heard of.
Because of everyone listening to this podcast, we're actually getting publishers and authors reaching out to us now, which was not the case for the first year or two. You know, it was me begging and pleading. and thank you to all the authors that said yes. It really made the podcast so much better. But now that we're a lot bigger, authors are reaching out to us, and it just makes me feel so good every time. Yeah, really, I want to say like no, just out of spite, like once, you know.
No, but it is hard to like juggle everything, and like you know, we get emails constantly from people that want us to promote stuff. We only have so much attention span between the two of us, which actually isn't really that much. Nah. But I have been reading some other stuff. So I'm reading this book right now. I'm almost finished it with it because it's pretty short. But it's called "How to Defeat a Demon King in 10 Easy Steps." By Andrew Rowe, who also did the Arcane Ascension books. So it's lit RPG. It's like really short lit RPG. It's like this kind of off the cuff. You know how in lit RPG, I haven't read like a ton of it, but in literary RPG, you just gotta kind of like take what they're saying. You know what I mean? They're just like, this is how it is, and it's just because of this. Yeah. So, and it's like almost even more so, like just getting straight to the point with everything because it's like a novella, you know? It's really cool.
For everyone who doesn't know what that is, lit RPG is like a subcategory of fantasy where they break down the fourth wall, and it's kind of like a video game system where the main character will discuss like with the reader or with the people around him his actual progression in skills and what like class he's in and that sort of thing. So it's very much like video game gamified.
This one is really cool because in this world, every 100 years, a hero is reincarnated to defeat the Demon King who keeps rising, and kind of like Zelda, just like this Demon King situation. But this time, it's only been 23 years, and the Demon King has conquered almost half the world. So it's like we're running out of time here.
So if the Demon King does it quick on this cycle through, does it like just
a piece? That seems to be the case. I mean, it's really cool because this character isn't very strong, doesn't have a lot of ability, but they find like this. It's almost like they find a way to like cheese the whole thing by like exploiting a kind of like looked over like class. You know, it's really cool.
Oh, right. Could they like mix that like, cross class, like bard with thief?
They're like grinding. Like, you know how you can, in some games, you can just like grind your way to being really strong, even though that's like not the way the game like really wants you to play it.
Right. Just go kill a ton of those little guys and they'll level up.
And obviously a lot of other stuff happens, but like that's what kind of hooked me in the beginning, because that's kind of the very beginning of it. And I was like, this is a pretty cool approach. You know, it's like they know the system so well. They're like, well, I'm not very strong, but here's what I'll do, you know?
Here's what I'll do, right? Yeah, I mean, I appreciate someone who's clever, you know? Yeah. Now, is this one the sort of thing where he has, like, a menu and can see his own stats?
There
or is he
something
just very...
like that, yeah.
Okay. Did the book do a good job in giving it a purpose as to why he has access to, like, his own stat board?
I don't want to spoil it.
Team fights with monsters like an exceptional.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be as, like I said before, it's like a novella, so it seems to kind of like step to just kind of like this is the way everything is, so we're moving on kind of thing. It doesn't seem to feed into the world building as much as probably some other lit RPGs do.
Totally. I mean, a type of world building is like their whole shtick, right?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, like, I think it...
Character building.
Yeah, it's character building. I'm into that. And then also, I'm still reading Oliver Twist. I took a break from that, but it's Oliver Twist. It's cool. Like, it's never really boring.
But it's never really, like, excruciatingly interesting.
Yeah, like, I'm like, oh, I should read Oliver Twist. And I'm like, I think I'm going to read Empire of Storms.
Right.
Like, it's not... It's a very good book. There's a reason why it stood the test of time, but it's like... I'm not like, oh, I can't wait to get back in there, you know?
Right. It's like the whole, it's like the sport of golf, you know? It's like, no one's like going crazy over it. Like, even the people who really like watching it are like very subdued, you know?
And then last thing that I'll talk about that I'm reading, I didn't finish anything this week, but I am reading, all right,
I love a good rolling, a little preface.
I'm rereading The Wheel of Time, kind of.
Oh, that's a terrible decision. Wow.
I know.
So you went for not only a ginormous huge series, we're reading two other ginormous series, but you picked possibly one of the worst ones.
It's not bad. I like it a lot. I love it. I love the characters, man. It's like rewatching The Office, you know? Like, it's just...
I don't know if it's much like watching The Office. but for you personally,
I think there's definitely somebody out there listening right now that is sitting in their car and they're like, yes, Evan, I know exactly what you mean. Because like Rand and Perrin and Matt and Egwene and Nynaeve and Moraine and Lan, and I love all of these people, even though they're super dorky, and like there's such a I don't mean this in the political sense, but there's such a conservative like bent to these characters, you know, especially like the ones from the Two Rivers, where they're just like, oh my word, like why would you say something like that, like oh totally. It wasn't like this before when we braided our hair and we never said anything bad about any, like it's just right, naughty right. naughty, you know, like they're all just so like naive. I think Robert Jordan really nailed the like we're from a small town kind of, and we have like small town sensibilities like in this big world.
Right. Like Aragorn was like always kind of a little prince in some, like you knew he was always sure, like, he's yeah. like, I'm way better yeah. than my brother. Yeah, like hunting.
Way better.
And like, yeah. And I can go hunting deer and, you know, go into the mountains all alone. I'm not afraid.
No surprise that I'm super good at magic, you know?
Yeah. Super good at magic. No,
but,
yeah.
But like, I think that was one of the big draws for the Wheel of Time for a lot of people, is that they had read like the, you know, a lot of these kind of chosen one prophecy type books. But in this one specifically, Rand Althor, who is no, it's not really much of a spoiler, like he's the main character, he's the chosen one, he's the dragon reborn, but like he is not okay with it, like he really doesn't want to do it, like he's so much the reluctant protagonist that he's like, it's almost like he's doing things that even though everybody's like, dude, you should do it like this, he's like, screw that, I don't want to do that, I don't like any of this, I didn't ask for any of this, I hate this, you know. And
man, it would be rough to be in a position like that where you're like prophesied, like I'm the dragon reborn, like I'm the last airbender. Yeah.
And not to mention like in the lore for the Wheel of Time, the dragon reborn is prophesied to like, and much like a lot of the men that use the type of magic that he can use, he goes crazy. Like eventually you just go insane until you die. And so he's been told that like his whole life, that like that's what's going to happen to anybody that messes with this situation. And so totally. And then they're like, okay, well, you're in the middle of it. And he's just like, what? Like, this sucks. I don't want to be here.
That's right. Yeah. I forgot that whole side of it, because yeah. men can't do magic, but he's like prophesied to be able to do it, to bring down the bad guy, yeah. but doing so will make him turn insane. So he's like, in order to be successful, I become insane.
I'm in the Great Hunt right now. So like I listened to Eye of the World on audiobook, and I didn't talk about it on the podcast because I was like, I don't know if it's just like I was rocking Eye of the World, and like
I can see that cover so clearly.
Oh yeah, it's classic.
The guy and the horse.
But like,
so
now I'm into the Great Hunt, and I'm like almost halfway through the Great Hunt, and I'm like, I think I'm doing this.
Wow.
I think I'm doing this. Like, I think,
yeah,
I'm,
I think you are, dude.
I just
you're
love
not
it.
Just like a few bites into the sandwich. You're like, oh, a side salad. You ate it all.
I'm on the next serving. So yeah, like I don't know. We'll see. Because I finished Mistborn, and then I didn't even start book two, and I was like, I don't want to read this anymore. Like, it's because I like the ending of Mistborn. The first one is really cool, and I know that the ending of the third one is supposed to be really awesome. But I'm just, I'll be honest with you, dear listener, I'm not in the mood for Mistborn right now. Chad, I always took it for granted when Chad said that he didn't like the world build.
No, it's just bleak,
and I kind of agree. Like, I don't really like the world build very much.
Ashy.
I love the magic system.
Same.
I think Vin is a great character. I like the story, and I like the mystery surrounding a lot of the things that are going on, and I want those solved. But like, I don't really like being in Luthadel. Like, I just don't really like it.
The world's black and white or something.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think the writing's bad or anything like that. It's just like I was kind of at the same time listening to Eye of the World, and it's just like rump-a-dump-a-dump, like we're on an adventure.
Evan's like, what I need is a good old plebeian protagonist, a good folksy hero I can get behind, someone dependable with two friends.
Two friends. Well, the two friends. And Egwene and Nynaeve, who...
oh, yeah, and three love interests.
Like, well, Nynaeve's not a love interest, but there are three love interests, yeah.
Yeah.
Which...
Because there's Min later, I think, right?
Min and... I don't want to get...
Spoily?
It's a little spoily. Yeah. But, like, all that being said, I do want to just kind of go down a little bit of a tear here and vent a little bit about the Wheel of Time.
Dude, I love Wheel of Time, Ben.
Okay, so one thing that kind of bugs me about it is... And it's just... Okay, so... Robert Jordan, he did this thing where he was like, ah, okay, so like patriarchy is not great, so we'll make a matriarchy and we'll have them have like all the same traits as a patriarchy. It'll just be like these women that are totally terrible, but it's like, aha, like see how horrible it is when like, and it's like, I think he kind of missed with it. And if you're listening right now, And you're like, Evan, you're so off base here. Please hit me up on the Wheel of Time part of the Discord. We can totally hash it out there. That doesn't really bug me. It's like, yeah, he kind of missed, but it's like, I see what he's going for. It's fine. It's whatever.
I don't know if you really like it. I mean, if you like say it succinctly, like, we're going to say patriarchy is bad by showing a matriarchy that's bad. So the patriarchy is bad because similar structures are bad. And it's like, well, then it seems like we're confusing the message. I'm not convinced that he did that on purpose.
That's why I think it misses a little bit, because I think it's like, unless you knew that going in, I don't think it's that easy to pick up on. You know what I mean? And I think that like,
does he hate women? I literally thought that.
Something that doesn't really help the case along very much, in my opinion. There's like that whole conversation. And then there's like this separate thing in my mind that's like more cringe and more annoying. It's that he confines nearly every character into a very tight gender conforming gender norm box that's just like, oh, men, like, oh, women, you can't live with them, can't live without them, you know, or like, men are so stubborn and bullheaded. And it's like, and he just keeps hitting those points in like every chapter, and it's like, it's just so, it just gets old after a while. It's like boomer humor, you know what I mean? It's like Minions, like Facebook meme humor, you know?
Totally. I'm so okay with like men being men and women being women in the story, but you're right. No, I actually stopped reading that series because of what he did with his women. They were just so like
vindictive and horrible.
Like they were pecking at the men all the time. Like, if you could define like what you should not generalize a woman as, be like all the things that we probably like wouldn't mention, because that might be offensive. That's like what all of his women are. And I literally thought that he had like a bad divorce or something happened through the story. Because I was like, man, all these women are just driving me away from the story, and it's not their fault.
I think that most of the time with Wheel of Time, when those conversations are happening, it's like, it's supposed to be kind of like humor. Like, oh, you foolish man, like, can never get anything done without a woman, you know? And it's like, in my mind, it's just kind of like archaic and just kind of, it's just not very.
Sounds a little woman-splainy.
I mean, I think it's, but he's, I don't know. Man.
Again, like, mansplaining is bad because woman-splaining, see, is terrible. It's a weird point. Like,
what
make.
A weird roundabout way to do that. Yeah,
yeah, dude, no, I don't know that that's the point that he's making.
I don't know. Like, in my mind, I don't think it's as much like a real solid point that he's trying to make as much as it is just like Facebook humor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like, oh, my wife doesn't let me watch the game. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of humor. And it's just like, ugh. Like I said, I love the Wheel of Time. I think it's great. But there is just like that kind of element to it that's always, I just kind of skip over it sometimes. Like, if I can tell that it's just like this big, long, you know, dialogue of just like how much this man is so frustrated by how awful this woman, it's just like, whatever, like, I don't really care about that.
Yeah.
I mean, what's really at the heart of the Wheel of Time for me is like this dark force that is rising up. There's like these fractured kingdoms, and there's fractured factions and stuff. There's like all this infighting with the Aes Sedai. Then there's like this religious aspect with the Children of the Light. And then at the very center of it all, you've got Egwene, Matt, Perrin, and Rand. They're all such distinct people with distinct ways of looking at things. And so like getting the filter of all these events happening in the world through each of their eyes is like really interesting. And there's just, dude, some of the most epic scenes in all of fantasy or in the Wheel of Time. So it's a long slog. It's a slog.
There is some amazingly epic scenes in there. Yeah. I get a little bit overwhelmed sometimes when the characters all go off on their separate ways. Like, I really enjoy when we travel together because we can just all be at the same thing. And then I can observe, you know, like you were saying, one of his strengths is each character is so unique to their own self. And there's really hard, not very much crossover as far as the personality.
Really unique characters. Yeah.
Yeah, really unique characters. And they add a lot to the story. And it's not redundant in any way.
No.
But it's bad when they all separate, because I want to follow them all, and you do, but there's just too many.
you do.
And some of them are not like doing interesting things.
It's too long, man. It's too long.
Yeah.
And I think even like the biggest Wheel of Time fans would agree, like, it's too long. Like, it could have been like 8 or 9 books, like very solid, in my opinion, 8 or 9, but some people say like, you know, 9 or 10. Like, 10 seems to be kind of like the consensus that I see. It's like, it could have been 10 books.
And how many of them are there?
14. Technically 15.
Yeah, that's 4 too many at least.
It's a lot.
And I think, I don't know. I mean, there's a certain level of like, of classical hubris that comes with the Wheel of Time, like having it on your shelf. It's like a big.
Oh, yeah, I've got them all right behind me.
It's a statement
yeah.
piece, I feel yeah. like.
It's a statement. Well, the thing with the Wheel of Time, too, is that apparently, so back in the 90s, when Robert Jordan was putting these out, I don't know if this is like 100% true, but this is what I've heard about the publishing situation with fantasy books in the 90s is it was like what they were really trying to push a lot of the time was like airport books. They were like trying to get people to buy books in airports. They were trying to get people to buy books like just straight off the show because there wasn't like a lot of community the way that there is now. You know what I mean? Like you had to get them like it was like these shelves in Barnes and Noble, these shelves at the airports, like these, like it's just this is where people are picking stuff up.
I'm shocked they pushed it at airports.
Well, what I'm saying though is like what they told Robert Jordan, and this is just what I've heard. I don't know 100% if this is true, but like what allegedly what they told Robert Jordan was like, hey, since you're writing this long of a series, you're going to have to, you need to explain what's going on in a lot of detail and like reiterate where everything's at in each book. So there's like a lot of like catching the reader up in the Wheel of Time books, because the idea was that if somebody picked up The Fires of Heaven, book five, in an airport, they'd be able to sit and read it on a plane and understand where everything was at. And that's cool. But like the problem is like you have a lot of parts where it's like Rand remembering like a bunch of stuff from the books beforehand, or like Egwene thinking for like pages and pages about stuff that's already happened that like the reader already totally knows about because they already read the earlier books.
So you think he does a good job filling you in?
I mean,
by book eight or something, that's a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if he does a good job or not, but like, I mean, I know that I've heard that that's one of the contributing factors to why the series is so long and has so much bloat, because like there's a lot of repetitive kind of like, here we are again, here's what's going on, let's talk about all this again, you know, there's just like a lot of like
runway taxiing time in this book. We need to add pad out some runway taxi time.
But yeah, I mean, it seems like now publishers don't want the big doorstopper books. They don't want you to put out like, I mean, Sanderson's doing it obviously, you know, like if I had come to tour with a 350,000 word book, I imagine they would have been like, geez, dude, like this better be really, really good.
I don't agree with the common like, oh, kids these days just want nothing but 30-second clips. It's like, I don't know.
They look want at long like books. Some of the
look at podcasting. It's wildly popular and it's in a long form format. And so I think there's a lot of call for long form content out there. But I do think that when it comes to books like that, it's got to be more advantageous for the person selling it to make a small punchier like series or break it up in some way.
Well,
you know,
I don't know. I mean,
once you're at book nine, like how many people have you really kept along? You know, like,
I mean, it depends. Like look at Stormlight, we're on book five and they're only selling more, you know,
they're only selling more.
But like I think that the case breaking with Sanderson records. Is that he doesn't have as much bloat in a big giant book as like a new author would.
Right.
So somebody who hasn't been doing it for very long, if I put out a 1,000-page book, there'd be some bloat in there. Like there'd be there'd be whole scenes.
I'd be pissed at you.
Yeah, there'd be whole scenes where Evan, it's just like, what? Evan, what is going on here? Like you have like a 20-page chunk of like talking about the alligator hanging from the ceiling in the wizard's office. You know, it's like it's so
it's the
boring.
Opposite of what you did though.
Yeah, I wrote
a
really
punchy.
Yeah, mine's really punchy. Mine's still under 100,000 words, even after all the revising and extra stuff that I've added. But yeah, that's everything that I'm reading. I'm pretty stoked about my reading actually right now. I'm really happy with it. There's some other stuff I want to get to soon, but I'll talk about that next week. I'm almost done with the Fallout show. People that listen to the podcast know that I watch shows very slowly, but I'm on episode like six, I think, of Fallout. Man, it's just such a good show.
Such a good show.
So happy about how good of a show it is. And actually, it motivated me to start playing Fallout 4 again.
Dude,
have you played Fallout 4?
That's a quality piece of... No. But anything that, like a show that gets you to read the book or play the game, like that's
Chad,
a good job.
I think you would really like Fallout 4. I think you should play
it. You think
so? Yeah.
Okay, so here's my thing with like video games like that, because I know you can put a lot of time into those games.
And you're in such a good place for that right now, man.
Like you... Kind of, but yeah. you're not wrong. Though I do... I don't know. I prefer, if I'm going to sink my claws into a game, I really prefer like dragons, magic, and swords over guns and technology.
Let me make the case for Fallout real quick for you. Let me defend Fallout for you, because I know how much you love your like happy-go-lucky video games and your fantastical video games and stuff like that.
Yeah, you say your piece, but I think I know where you're going and you're not wrong.
You watched the show. You liked the show. One of the cool things about the show that they really captured from the games is its sense of humor. You know what I mean?
Yes. It's optimistic bubbliness.
It's like, hey, the world ended, but we're all still here, you know?
Right.
But like also there is a certain darkness to those games too, but I think it balances it really well. You do get a dog companion named Dogmeat, who can follow you around.
Dogmeat?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, he's a German Shepherd, and he's the best.
You're constantly reminding him of his second function, just in case you get hungry.
But yeah, like I think you would like Fallout 4, man. I think you'd like it.
Okay.
It's a good, and I think that when it came out, everybody was kind of disappointed. And I'll say the thing that everybody said about it, and I agree with it. It's not the best Fallout game, but it is a very good video game. You know.
Okay. Okay. Now, what makes a better Fallout game to you?
My decisions having a lot of weight. I think that's really important in Fallout. Like in Fallout New Vegas, like there's a lot of factions that you can go with, and there's just, it feels a lot more like you're building a character. But with Fallout 4, it's like it's a voiced protagonist in Fallout 4. It's more like you're, it feels a little more
along for the ride.
Like, yeah, it feels like, oh, we gave you a choice, but like, you know, you got to do this.
Totally. Yeah.
It'd be much better for you and the game if you did it like this. So. It's fun.
Man, no one's getting tricked by that, game makers. Come on. Like, I hate a fake choice where, like, they think that they have so much control. And it's like, no, we don't think that. We get exactly what you're doing. You're not being elegant. You're being lazy. And, you know, I don't offer choices. I loved it when Assassin's Creed Odyssey, when you make a choice about some guy is asking you to do something where you cure him of a disease, and you can either cure him or not. And that, if you don't cure him, eventually the whole island gets taken over by this disease.
That's like pretty early in the game. And I think it's like a family or like a group of people. But yeah, Assassin's Creed Odyssey is a really good game. I don't care.
Such a good game.
So last little bit about me, and then we can move on to your week. Personal thing for me that happened. I bought a car.
Ooh, honk honk.
I didn't like run out and buy a brand new car or anything. But I got, it was a very sensible purchase. I got a 2008 Hyundai Elantra.
Oh, that's very nice.
160,000 miles. Only one previous owner before me took really good care of it. It's a very pretty deep blue, and it's a 5-speed manual. And I think that's why I got it for kind of cheap, because I think that not a lot of people, I don't mean this, this is going
to
sound,
it's hard to text and drive a manual car.
Not a lot of people can drive manuals. I don't mean it in like a sense of like, not a lot of people could drive manuals.
I do. It's like a losing, like if you had good calligraphy, like handwriting, if you could do cursive, you should totally lord that over everyone else. Cause like I don't, and that would be cool to be able to do it.
Can you drive a manual?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I learned on a manual and I feel really superior about it.
So the reason that I decided like years ago that I needed to learn how to drive a manual was because I was watching that movie Hostel, the Eli Roth movie. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Okay. So it's,
yes, I have seen it.
If you're listening right now, you've never seen Hostel, don't watch Hostel. But like, if you have seen it, then you know what it's about. It's a very messed up movie. Essentially, I'll just kind of give you a little, like, someone gets captured and they're in a bad place. And then at the end of the movie, this person escapes and they get into a car. And in that moment of him escaping, I was like, if I was in this situation and I got into a car and it was a 5-speed or it was a manual transmission and I died because I didn't know how to drive a manual, I'd be so mad. So it motivated me to go learn how to, because like, and it wasn't just because like, if I'm ever in Slovakia, I don't want to, it wasn't like that specific, but it was like, if one of my friends is hurt or something, or we're out in the middle of nowhere and like,
well, it's like kind of likely you might encounter that.
You need to know how to drive it. Like, it's really, it's like, you should know how to drive any car that you like come across, you know? So it's been really cool. And now it's like, I don't even think about it.
I like the control actually. And for the exact same reason, I taught myself how to fire a gun with my right hand as opposed to my left hand, just because, you know, on the equally likely scenario that I'm running through a battlefield and need to just pick up a weapon, I want to be able to use it, right? Yeah. It's not going to be left-handed, probably. So, fortunately, everyone, you can return from the edge of your seats. I can shoot both. So, just fine.
Funny thing, I don't know if we can call it funny, but when I told my partner Effie that I was planning on getting a car, I was like, I'm going to get an automatic because I actually don't really like driving manual because it's just like, I don't know. I'd rather just get in the car and go.
What? And you? What? Okay.
I know. Like, I'm glad I know how.
You're an interesting fella.
Okay. So like, I get to the, but then I saw this car and I was like, it's cheap. It's got good gas mileage. I saw all of the maintenance records and everything. And it was like, all right, I'll just get it because it's a manual. And so I brought it home And Effie was just like, I thought you were going to get an automatic. And I was like, we're going to have to teach you how to drive a manual. So yesterday, very much against Effie's wishes, she didn't really want to do this. But I was like, no, you need to know how to drive this car just in case. Like, yeah, just
we're ever in a post-apocalyptic situation being chased by a creature.
And like, yeah, my hands got blown off or something. Like, you need to know.
Or I'm robbing something. You're my driver.
And to be totally 100% honest, like, I just wanted to see her try to drive a stick shift because I'm just like awful. But she did a really good job. But like, so it's just funny. I want to bring this up because so we go out to Gresham, Oregon, which if none of you know where that is, it's like a far suburb of Portland. It's way out east. We went to an abandoned Kmart parking lot. It was like towards the end of the day. So the sun's going down. And we didn't really think much of it. We were just like, let's go to the abandoned Kmart parking lot. And like, dude, the amount of drug deals that were going on in this parking lot.
I was going to say, like, were you just like running over fentanyl users? Like, Effie, another one.
Like, I felt bad because like, we probably looked as sketchy as everybody else knew they were being. Like, because like, we were just like driving in circles around this. This parking lot, like, which
did
is
we rob them? Like, no, dude, they've got they're having a rough enough day.
I was like literally waiting for some guy to be like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm just teaching my girlfriend how to drive a stick, man. Like, I'm sorry, like, you guys keep doing your thing. But it was just like so sketchy. There's like this brand new like 2024 Mercedes just taking laps around this abandoned Kmart with like the sun is going down and there's like people standing on the corner then like getting in the car and then like they'll
like starting and stopping all the time. Like, this guy's like definitely an undercover police officer who's like keep trying to move,
right? Yeah. And I was just like, oh my god, I'm so glad I'm driving like a shitty little car and like not like a brand new, like, you know, I didn't buy like a black Dodge Challenger or something like rolling around,
right.
Like, but yeah, it was cool. She did a really good job. I mean, she stalled it a few times but then picked it up pretty quickly. So
dude, did she have to start on a hill? That's always like a nerve-wracking experience.
Okay,
the first time.
So yeah, we the particular parking lot we were in had a few hills in it because it's a really big parking lot.
What sort of parking lot is this?
It was really big. Yeah. It was just like one of those old, like, it was a Kmart and like a furniture store and like just this gigantic
like
parking lot
complex.
Yeah. But so she was driving around the flat part a little bit and then she got it to the hill and then stopped. And I was like, should I tell her about the hills? Like,
I always think it's best to just go in blind.
Yeah.
Do your thing, but maybe try to do a little fat. No, don't. You don't want to get so her head
like,
about it.
Yeah. So she like confidently like puts it in first and then we just start rolling backwards.
She's like, what if there was a car behind me? Like, well, yeah, you gotta be fast.
Yeah, yeah, you gotta do it quickly. Yeah. But yeah, she did a really good job. And but like the first time I had to do it, I learned for like half an hour. And then I can't remember exactly. I think it was like my ex-girlfriend like got called into work or something. And then her mom like needed help. Like, it was in like a situation.
It was your scenario. You're like, oh, I know this one.
Yeah. And so like, I had to like get in the car and like drive all the way across Portland and like 5 o'clock traffic in a stick for the first time. So I like, it was like a sink or swim kind of thing.
Dude, you swam like a champ. Just keep swimming, dude. I learned a stick with my extremely militaristic friend who is now a member of Special Forces of the Marine Corps. He used to call me Seawick, and many still do. He invented the nickname for me. And he was like, all right, Seawick, every time you stall the car or make me uncomfortable in any way, I'm going to just smash your shoulder with my fist.
Oh my God.
So that's how I learned driving around. And I would like jerk a little bit, like, and I would just like flinch, you know, for a couple of weeks afterwards. Every time I stalled it a little bit, I just kind of flinch, you know, you kind of had a Pavlovian response training to me. But boy, did I learn fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I stalled it once because I wasn't paying attention. It was like a couple days ago. But I don't know. I don't want to use it too much. You know, cars are cool, but they make me kind of nervous, you know?
I often think what it would be like if I had an Egyptian in the car, right? Like an ancient Egyptian, not one from today. They're like, there's still Egyptians today. You know that, right? an ancient Egyptian, they would be absolutely terrified. Dude, yeah. I picked up this hitchhiker one time and he was maybe not the most risk tolerant because I get in this conversation about how it's so crazy that we all have normalized being in this like little tin can bomb just hurling down the highway, just like
powered
anything.
By explosive liquid.
Dude, after like 20 minutes of me just going off like doom scrolling about the car, I looked over and he was like white knuckle grabbing his. He's like, hey, can we maybe change the subject?
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh dude, I'm so sorry.
But it's true. Yeah, I mean, I don't really like being a passenger in a car because I've been in a few pretty bad car accidents. And
terrible passenger.
And like, man, people just, I don't think, I'm not like the best driver in the entire world or anything, but you know, I haven't really driven in a few years, man. Like I just forgot, like just the chances that some people take, and like, just, it's just weird, man. Like people just swerving in and out of traffic with no blinker and going like 30, 40 miles above the speed limit. And it's just like, dude, like you're spinning the wheel, man. Like we're all spinning the wheel being out here.
Spinning so many wheels, four to be exact. And then like a bunch of metaphorical ones as well.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's all from me. That was how my week went. It was a pretty good week. Let's hear about yours.
I'm glad to hear that Effie has now got that life lesson under her belt, dude. So, I feel like that's a pretty cool thing to be like, have taught her, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll just mention real fast. I pulled up Memories of Ice because it's been a few weeks since I had cracked it open. Blown off the dust a little bit and was like, I'm just gonna see what's going on here, and was just like, nope, this is too much, nope. Like it was just there's just so
it's
much
really
in those
dark
books, and they're so dark. The Panny and Damen are like a whole special type of dark. While I'm here for it, I think I'll be more here for it in like a month from now.
Yeah, totally. It's really dark.
It's really dark. Yeah,
and it's
really
dark. There's humor in it, you know.
Yeah, but it's like the I have to laugh or I'll cry sort of humor.
That's how all the characters feel too.
Yeah, it's like when your friend like comes back from war and he's like really desensitized and he makes a lot of like death jokes and you're like, man. So then you're like, okay, well, he kind of had to do that, you know.
Definitely.
Goodbye. Anyway, so you know, I hopped on over to Empire of Storms. There's a lot happening in those books. You know, give one thing for Ma, she's never afraid to just like totally change her world.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of excited to see where the story's going to go because I don't know how there's going to be multiple more books.
Yeah, it's interesting how things happen and you're like, well, how are you going to... And then it just kind of levels out again and you're like, this is interesting. Like, okay, wow, I didn't really expect that at all. And then she kind of like fits it back in and you're like, okay, well, I guess I'm here for this ride now. It keeps things fresh for sure.
It keeps things fresh. And like I've mentioned as a complaint where I think, you know, a lot of littles... is what her story is typically composed of, and I tend to find more like juice that I really latch onto in like a deeper one story as opposed to a bunch of little events. But man, the flip side of that coin is a bunch of like really fun, cool little events and a woman who is not in any way afraid or cares at all about what anyone else thinks. She's gonna do what she's gonna do and write what she wants to write.
Well,
it feels,
and it's
like evident.
Yeah.
She loves it.
Yeah. So cool. I'm stoked to talk more about those. It's going to be cool.
Me too. Yeah. I think just reading that and not Malazan as well will be
probably
nice.
A good call for you. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm almost done with the Goblin Emperor.
Nice.
I'm really, really glad the book isn't longer than it is.
Yeah. I think I know what you mean.
I liked it a lot. I like it a lot. It's just. It's kind of like with my same complaint that I was just giving for Sarah J. Maas. It's just like there's a bunch of little events. Now, I will say that this is more of a character driven story about someone's like growth and them overcoming insecurities and kind of seizing the reins of their own destiny, even though it was seemingly taken from them and has been from the beginning. But them kind of doing their best within the situation that's been thrust upon them. And I really like the character, really like his growth, but. I'm ready for the story to be over because I don't really know what else there is to accomplish.
It's not a like really exciting book.
No.
But it is really interesting.
It's, you know, it's like it's hard to even say because like there's some emotional things that the main character is dealing with that he kind of does in a really healthy way. Like he's just a really like
he's like an even-keeled person.
Yeah. He's an even-keeled and mature, and he truly is trying to do the best that he can.
Yeah. That's why he's so compelling.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, sometimes. A character who's just like always good for good's sake can get a little like annoying, you know? I mean, this one is bad and has some bad and acknowledges his own bad, but it's just a good guy, man.
He's a very endearing character for sure.
And man, he would love to get beers with me, honestly. I've never seen someone who's more desperate for a friend.
Yeah, there's like a certain like loneliness throughout the whole book.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think that it's captured super, super well.
Super well.
It's a really unique book.
It's a celebrity type of loneliness, which is a very unique sort of like everyone is looking at you. You have all the attention and yet none of the relationship sort of thing. You wish you were going home with everybody, but everyone thinks that they wished that they were you, you know?
Have you ever read Survivor by Chuck Palahniuk?
I have not, no.
It's about somebody who gets put into a not quite similar situation, but just like, I don't want to spoil it.
Did you like Chuck Palahniuk's writing? He's really a hitter.
I don't not like it. I mean, I think that like, let's see, I've read Choke, Survivor, Fight Club, Haunted.
Yep.
I think that's it. I've heard Lullaby's really good. I've heard Invisible Monsters is really good. I don't know. I don't not like it.
Snuff.
Oh yeah, I haven't read Snuff. I think it's like really, it's like really visceral, really vivid, really like intense writing sometimes. I'm just like not, I don't think I'm really much ever in the mood for it. You know?
No, it's very like flow of, or at least I think this
stream
was
of consciousness.
With, yeah, stream of consciousness, where they'll have like multiple people talking, like actually conversing with each other and use like no quotation marks.
Does he do that?
Yeah.
No, I don't really.
And there's a
that.
Few times that it's just like a flow, and it sometimes works. And I think you're supposed to be so engrossed that you don't notice and just kind of like breeze through. Mm. But I noticed and was like, I don't know who's speaking anymore.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. I think he has really, really awesome ideas and like premises.
Totally.
For his books, and then sometimes it's just like, oh geez, it's so gross, dude. Like,
yeah, it's like he found God. Like a cool meme or something that was like, oh, that's an interesting idea, like someone who like chokes and then gets people to like save him and then feel the sense of like ownership for their life, and he gets like,
he, like works
this
at
weird
a
like
colonial like reenactment place,
and he gets this like vapid sort of like relationship by having like a bunch of little like envelopes from people who have a sense of ownership over his life because they saved him from choking, apparently. And you know, it's like a cool idea, but then to turn that whole thing into a, like, you're so tired of the main character by the time that you're done with those books, I feel like.
Yeah, he's from Portland.
I know. Of course he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen him out, but one of my friends saw him.
He's the author that Portland deserves.
We also had Ursula Le Guin. And Fonda Lee is from Portland, too.
No one deserves Ursula.
No. So I guess one of my friends said they saw him walking his cat on a leash.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me at all.
It's like, yeah, that sounds like something Chuck Palahniuk would do.
Yeah, dude, he looks like somebody who's like really, really into his Peloton.
Really? You get that vibe from him?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't get that vibe.
Oh, for sure, dude. Oh, he's like a Peloton guy.
I've never gotten that vibe.
Oh, really?
I want to get a Peloton. I wish I was a Peloton guy. I don't have the money for it.
Dude, it'd be sweet to be the Peloton like person. Like, who does the, you know, all right, guys, 3 more minutes. Let's go. Uphill. Breathe deep.
I think you'd be really good at that.
I would be, yeah. I'd have a lot
you
of fun.
You should do
it. Dude, that'd be pretty fun. You'd have to really be in good shape.
Yeah, you would.
When I was coaching martial arts, I was in great shape just because you're always doing these moves and stuff. Now I have to like warm up my hips before I throw a head kick, or else I might like dislocate something.
To warm up my hips before I sit down and play video games. Dude,
crisscross applesauce is brutal. Brutal on the middle-aged man. So yeah, anyway, we got a little rabbit trail there, but The Goblin Emperor is great. It's very vibey, and I'm glad that it's almost over, though I certainly really enjoyed it while it was there. Like, that's not a statement of it not being good. It's just,
yeah,
I've eaten the meal and I'm ready for it to be over.
Totally. That's fair.
And I'm really excited for the kind of empty window that lays in front of the Goblin.
What a fun time to be in. You're like, dude, what am I gonna do next?
I'm like
next?
Recklessly just grabbing books off my bookshelf, like, oh, it's real great, because I've been staying with my parents a little bit because their house is serene and out in the national forest. It's been lovely. And thanks, Mom. Thanks, Dad. I know you're listening.
Thanks, Jody. Thanks, John.
And I don't want to be bookless, because that's like an actual source of anxiety for me. And so whenever I leave my actual house, I'll just grab a few like randos off of the, and they're always ones that our listeners have sent us. And so they're like, oh, these ones I'm like going to get to, but they weren't really on like at the TBR. And I'm just like surprising myself again and again. And it's really great.
Ooh.
I'm also enjoying where I'm at with books right now.
Do you have an idea of what you want to read after Goblin Emperor?
Yeah, I want something. I've been hitting the like different types of stories pretty hard, like a personal growth one. The Will of the Many was like pretty unique and crazy, which I meant. What a great book.
Yeah.
Cannot speak highly enough.
I'm still
recommending
it to everybody.
Man, I was like sad that I couldn't talk about it this week, so I'm finding a way. I want something that's got a lot of action. I want something kind of bloody, but not like focused on the gore. Like not Joe Abercrombie. More
not
like
Joe
Dritz Dwarden.
More like Dritz.
Yeah. Maybe I'll literally read Dritz. Oh, man.
You can read some Dritz. You can always read Dritz. Yeah,
dude, and there's always more Dritz to read.
Have you read any Michael Moorcock, like the Elric stuff?
No, I don't think I have.
Dude, you should read that. that's the inspiration for Dritz.
Really?
That's where Dritz and Geralt came from. Is Elric of Melnibone?
Boy, Moorcock is a really unfortunate last name.
I agree with you,
man. That's like not even hiding at
just
all.
Change it,
dude.
Man. Yeah,
yeah.
I was watching Parks and Rec last night, and I paused it right when the name Norm Hiscock came up. It's like, dude, change your name.
Yeah.
Just change it. Like, what are you doing? You're not giving yourself a chance.
His parents were like, you think that Michael, like, the alliteration will make it kind of just blend in? Like, no, dude, it draws attention to it. But we do like the attempt. Now, that's all I've been reading. Been really nice. Just been reading a few things. I love that. It's great.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And I've been watching some Foundation with my dad, though I've been tipping him back and forth between Foundation and Shogun, and he's definitely taken with the Shogun path. Over the Foundation path.
Yeah, I still haven't watched it. I need to watch it.
Dude, Shogun is awesome.
I know.
It's real good. Like, probably best show that came out this year.
I keep telling myself I'm gonna read the books, and it's like, Evan, you're not gonna read the books. Just reading the Wheel of Time.
It is a very, very loosely based historical fiction. The characters are extremely loose, and the actual like events of the times that the that are within the story are much more historically accurate, but like the characters, most of them were actual like names in history that there are records of, but not like their personalities or, you know, obviously the conversations that they had is like a huge stretch. But yeah, I always kind of nice. I always like historical fiction because you feel like kind of smart when you're reading it. You're like, yeah, well, at least I'm learning some history, kind of. Yeah, I mean, I've learned the most about the Mongols and Rome actually from Khan Iguldin. Who's got the best name.
I just picked up a book by David Gran, the author of Killers of the Flower Moon, and this is a book called The Wager. I don't know if you heard of it.
No.
So apparently the story goes that a ship took off from, you know, like an old like galleon or what, I don't know what they're called.
A sloop?
Man o' war. This old ship took off in like the
sailboat?
18th century or something like that. I'm really paraphrasing here, but essentially what happened is this cobbled together like wreckage showed up on the shore of, I think, like Argentina or like Brazil or something. And they were like, oh, here's what happened. It was exactly like this. And they were like, wow, what a wild story. And then like a little while later, another piece of wreckage with different crew members showed up on the coast of Chile. And they had a completely different story of the events that went down on this ship. And so this is David Grant trying to like piece together exactly what happened to, I think the ship was called The Wager. So I'm really planning on reading that pretty quick, actually, because like, I don't read a lot of historical fiction, but this one, when I heard about it, I was like, I need to find out what the hell happened with this ship.
But it's all a true story.
It seems to be. Yeah.
Cool. It sounds a little similar to The Raft of the Medusa, which is a very famous painting by Theodore, I'm going to butcher this, but Gary Chalt. There's a lot of accent marks in there. I don't know. Gary Salt? I think it's Gary Chalt, I would think. But anyway, Theodore Gary Chalt, and there's a bunch of people on a raft. It's pretty grisly of a painting. Be warned if you want to go look at it. It's really beautiful and like well done, and like the sea is captured, and the despair, the hopelessness, the absolute terrible string of no doubt like worst lifetime days that these people have definitely been experiencing in order to get to the present state of affairs aboard that raft in the painting. It's a painting about a true event of a ship that was going down. They got hit some little reef or something off the coast of Africa, and they had to like cobble together a raft because they had like a few days. It was like slowly sinking, and then they made a raft, and then everybody gets on this raft, and then as the raft separates, before they can, this kind of crew divides into two different factions of like what they should be doing. And basically a all out war breaks out. And like what could have been like a pretty good, like people working together to overcome some hard situations becomes like a nightmare story of what happens when people are prideful and will give no quarter to their fellow man, human. And people starve to death, eat each other, kill each other. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's funny. Like what you just mentioned and the wager that I just mentioned also remind me of the Dan Simmons book, The Terror, which is about the Franklin Expedition in the 19th century trying to chart the Northwest Passage. Dude, books and shows and stuff about ships where something goes, it's just like, I will devour that every single, just straight give it to me, up. Put it in my veins. That's what I want.
You give me some of that like, mainline so cool ship problem goodness.
It's so cool.
Dude, knots and the creaking of it. You can feel like the brine on your face. Like, oh, it's just the best.
Have you seen Master and Commander with Paul Bettany and
like in the Far Side of the World? Russell Crowe?
Yeah,
like 20 times. It was one of my dad's favorite movies.
So good.
So it's good. So, sometimes I play the excellent movie. The scene of like the ending scene where they're doing the song.
Cellos,
like
the cello and the violin.
Yeah, yeah. Just because so I love the song so much. It's so good.
What a good movie.
Dude, what a good movie. And like aboard ships, they really had the sound thing right. Like they had a drum. You know, like I was out helping my dad at a property the other day. He has like his property and was building some things on it. He had a bunch of help from the members of the Messianic Jewish congregation that he's the leader of attending there. And as we're all going about working, there's probably 25 of us on this property. I just kept thinking, man, there should be someone standing in the middle with like a drum, like boom, 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 boom. And just like that really would have given us a whole like we're working together sort of feel. Like everyone would have been in sync. I feel like you would feel worse for not doing like being lazy because you're like, I'm out of sync with the team, you know? Like, man, I think a drum goes a long way.
Maybe.
Did like, for rowers like, anyway.
Yeah, that reminds me of the Joe Abercrombie book, Half a King.
Oh yeah.
There was like a big part of that.
Totally.
For sure.
A lot of ancient civilizations would go into battle with like some sort of instrument playing or something, you know, because it's easier to march in time when you're drumming, I guess. Would you want to be the drummer?
I always thought that would...
Dude, you are a drummer.
Well, I mean, probably not. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't want to be there at all.
Right, but you know, if you had a choice, like frontline sword guy or drum guy.
Yeah, but I have a feeling they weren't like, don't make sure you don't kill the drummer.
Oh, no,
like,
dude. But I mean, you're kind of in the back, probably.
Maybe, yeah. I mean,
you're definitely making the most noise.
Like, whenever I watch anything that has battle drums, I was just like, man, this it's just too real. Like, if I was in that situation, then it's like, okay, here come the drums. I'd be like, ah, this is getting a little too real for me right now. Like, ah, here we go.
Like, okay, we just take some deep breaths here. I need to find my happy place. Like,
did anybody go talk to them before we decided right. to do this?
Can we vote on the drum thing? Like, really filling me with anxiety over here.
It would.
Dude, it would, yeah. There's like this skull whistle thing that this Amazonian tribe, they just found one of these skull whistles. I read about it in the news, and they would blow into these things to create this like shriek, and it's a terrible horrific noise that was like otherworldly. If I can only imagine like 500 warriors covered in paint with making this noise coming out of the jungle, like nope. Anyway, that's been my week. It's been fantastic. Again, shout out to my folks for housing me at their house for a week and giving me all the serenity. It's been wonderful. Been playing my guitar. Man, I cannot be stoked enough about the guitar. What a cool instrument. I can hit it. Oh, yeah. I can slap it. I can strum it. I can pluck it. I can do all of these different things. And my mouth, most importantly, remains free. So I can sing. I can rap. I can beatbox. So I can do the other things that I've gotten good or spent a lot of time getting good at, singing maybe not so great, but like a little bit, in conjunction with the guitar. Though I will say, I can freestyle no problem. I can guitar no problem. Doing both at the same time, not doing either. Like terrible at both again.
but give it time and energy, dude, you know.
Last night I was able to be like boom slap boom boom slap boom, and then actually like rap out a little something. And I was like, oh, we're getting there, man. Because the goal is to freestyle a song, you know, just like get it.
Well, while playing chords.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like melody. Totally. I'm both rhythm, melody, and words. Yeah. All freestyle.
Keep doing it, man. Every day.
Yeah.
Maybe not every single day, but
dude,
do it frequently. Don't go like a week without doing it.
No.
You know?
No, I'm afraid. I don't want to work. I don't want my fingers to hurt like they used to. So that hurt a lot.
I
do.
Yeah. I'll go like months without playing guitar, and then I play it again, and I'm like, ow.
Ooh, this hurts my fingers.
Yeah. And then I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or my wrist gets tired or whatever. But I used to have really big calluses on my fingers.
Yeah, it's crazy how much. I've never had calluses on like the very tips of my fingers before.
All right, so that's both of our weeks. I wanted to go over a couple. We have two questions here from the BRK community that I wanted to. I never tell Chad what the questions are.
I just kind of
rattle them off, and he has to think on his feet.
Though I will plug them. Where do you ask these questions? Yes. You ask on the Discord, and there is a channel.
BRK channel. Yep. In the activities category, up towards the top of the sidebar in the Discord. So this question comes to us from Izzy, and Izzy asks, "Hey Evan, I've got a question for the podcast."
Well, not starting off great, Izzy.
It's a DM I got from Instagram.
Oh, it's a question like, "Why do you suck so much? Why is Chad like the only great one?"
let me finish here. Okay.
Sorry, Izzy.
The question is, if you had to get a bookish tattoo, what would you get?
Oh, actually,
I already know.
I think Izzy actually knows me so well that she left me out on purpose because she knows my sensitivities, knowing me probably say multiple times that I always think past Chad was an idiot and past future Chad will think today's Chad is probably an idiot. So I think any sort of tattoo, I'll just be sad with 10 years from now.
What? You can just get a tattoo. Just You don't even think about him after a while. Like, I have silly tattoos.
I've thought about it, and it would be like
I just don't even worry about
it. The only thing that I could ever consider would be like a mark, like recognizing my heritage, which is important to me. But like, man, historically, I don't. Sometimes I need to hide that stuff, you know. So,
sorry, I'm not.
No, it's funny.
I wasn't expecting I mean, that.
Terrible laugh. Or cry.
But so you wouldn't get like any like really cool like imagery from books that you love or anything like that, like ever?
I mean, okay, I think if I went with a tattoo, I'd have to become a tattoo guy. Because like one tattoo kind of sucks. But like if you have like a whole like bunch, it's cool. And I would get into it, you know, and then I would have like Endor on my arm, and you know, it's like my mom would be like, "You like Star Wars that much? Really? It's your favorite novel?" You know, I'd be like, "No, I just thought it was cool," and then you know.
But that's all the justification you need for a tattoo. It's your body.
I know.
Get whatever you want.
I would feel the need to defend myself voraciously.
Ah.
See, I'm already insecure about it. I just shouldn't do it.
I know. Have you? I won't try to convince you. You know, but if your answer is no tattoos, then I'll supply a few ideas.
I think they look awesome on other people, and I'll think about it for a second while you answer. Like if I wasn't tattooed.
So one that I really want to get is the Argonauth from Fellowship of the Ring. Like, you know, the two guys like holding out their hands on either side of the river.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I would like to get each of them, like one on each forearm. I think that'd be really cool.
So if you put your hands up, you would Argonauth?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. But I don't know. That's like a really big, like expensive tattoo to get. That would probably cost like $700 or $800, maybe a little bit more. Because tattoos are expensive.
They're expensive, but man,
yeah,
what an art form, right? It's like, oh yeah, there's no backspace.
I'm getting one tomorrow, actually.
Oh really? What are you getting? This is such a relevant question. Is Z for the win?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, I'm getting a tattoo tomorrow. So I went into this tattoo shop. It's like really close to my house, and I was like, he's like, hey man, so like, what are you thinking you want to get? And I was like, I want to get a mom tattoo. And he was like,
a mom?
The kind that I'm thinking of? And I was like, yes, the kind that you're thinking of. And he was so excited because it's like, it's going to be like the big like heart with the ribbon that says mom, you know? Wow. And I was like, just make it as much like a biker, like sailor tattoo as you can, you know? And we're going to do like a rose. And, you know, I just wanted the classic like mom tattoo on my arm.
Okay, kind of like an Ed. Is it Ed Hardy who does the biker?
Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't
like
know,
a biker
actually.
Shirt is Ed Hardy shirts, I think.
But yeah, so like I want to get it like really tacky. And,
but I mean, you know,
in your
defense,
like,
you kind of have the mom thing. It's part of your story, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'd probably get it either way. Yeah, my mom died.
Yeah, like every other superhero.
Right, exactly. I know. I have the tragic backstory.
Yeah, you do. You do have a tragic backstory.
But yeah, she's like super dead.
Also not funny. I don't know.
But I would get it. I would get it either way, like even if she wasn't, because like I love my mom. She's super cool. But I just like, I like the idea of having just, I want it to be like as tacky as possible. I want like
totally. I actually respect that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like and the artist, his name is Danner, and he's really cool. And he, like, as soon as I started talking about it, he was like, dude, I'm so into exactly that idea. Like, let's do it.
Are you going to get like checkered red and black or like?
I don't know. Yeah, we're gonna mess with a couple of things before he starts in, obviously. But yeah, I'm excited about that. And then it's funny because like when I met with him, he's like, "Do you have any other ideas of like what you want to get?" And it's funny because now I'm talking about this for the Monday episode. But I told him that I wanted to get the Crystal Castle from The Dark Crystal on my thigh.
You need a Dark Crystal tattoo. I'm really in support of your tattoos.
Yeah. I want the Crystal Castle from The Dark Crystal. Or I think it's called the Castle of the Crystal or whatever. I want to get it on my thigh, like really big. And I told him that, and he was like, dude, that's like my favorite movie. And I was just like,
essence under it.
Like we just like connected really quickly over it all. Cause he was like so excited about it.
Did we just become friends? We just became friends.
We just became friends. Then also another one that I want to get is, Smaug, like the little drawing of the dragon with like the really tall wings. The classic like Tolkien drawing. I want to get that somewhere.
Like over the Lonely Mountain.
No, not that one. If you type in like Tolkien Smaug drawing, it'll come up. It's like the bold lined drawing, like with like the really tall wings.
Oh,
like
totally.
That.
He's like a very, very long, thin serpent.
Yeah. I want to get that. That'd be cool. I was joking with my brother the other day because like we were at a restaurant eating. All These Things I've Done by The Killers came on, which is like the indie rock anthem, you know, like totally. I've got soul, but I'm not a soldier.
I love that song.
I was like joking with him. I was like, dude, I think like the ultimate millennial tattoo would be like get that in cursive and then get the Deathly Hallows like right above it.
I got sold.
With the Deathly Hallows right above it.
Oh, my gosh. So
like, I almost want to get it because it's like, it's such a horrible, like the Deathly Hallows thing. I feel like the reason that you see that tattoo so much is like a couple things. So like, obviously Harry Potter is a big deal to a lot of people. And then also it's such a quick, easy tattoo. You know what I mean? That has like a lot of meaning. So in that vein, I think also what would be cool is to get a Triforce somewhere on me from Zelda. It's just the three triangles. So I just want a lot of like small tattoos, you know, like I want one really big one. Like I think thigh tattoos are really cool.
I think thigh tattoos are awesome too. I think I find them very awesome and even extremely attractive many times on other people. But yeah, I just, you know, I just feel like if I had one, I would just have to become it's like if I wore boots.
I don't think that's true.
If I wore boots, I would be such a poser. Like nice boots, Chad.
What are you talking about? You're
like cowboy boots. You're
not a fact is being spit right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm a big fan of the idea and philosophy that like if you think that you can rock something like stylistically fashion, yeah. Then like you can. And
the
I
inverse
certainly
is true though.
Don't think yeah. that I could, so I probably couldn't. Mm, but
interesting.
Your confidence is both, you know, to be lauded and necessary for your forward motion on the tattoo front. I think
for me personally, it's like I live in a part of the country that's like, you know, it's like everybody has tattoos here, so the whole like totally. You know, good luck getting a job. It's like, no, there's like teachers and stuff.
Dude,
with tattoos
you have
like
sub tattooed on your face and you're like getting a job.
Yeah, you can get it. Like you can get pretty much any job even with a face tattoo here. I probably won't get a face. I wouldn't mind a neck tattoo.
Yeah,
a neck. Yeah, right in the neck, that'd be cool.
Lisa, it's like a random random name.
I just like the name.
Yeah, it's a good name, Lisa.
It's a cool name. Rolls right off the tongue, Lisa.
Oh, that's funny.
No, neck tattoo I think would be pretty cool, like an animal. I want to get an elephant. I really like elephants a lot.
Elephants have come up a few times over the last
they're
few
beautiful.
Episodes, but they're really cool animals.
I just love them so much. They're like my favorite animal. They're yeah. so cool.
You know, I would probably get have you ever read The Pilgrim's Progress?
No. I don't know what that is.
There's some really cool, it's a story about a pilgrim and him progressing towards like heaven, basically. And the whole thing is like an analogy for the strife and problems and bad people and good people and help and hurt and things that help us go forward and things that trick us and put us onto the wrong path of like walking a righteous life towards heaven and God. Like his progress is his journey to God and heaven. And it's just kind of a big analogy for life and everything. There's a bunch of like pretty simple life lessons but in there, but you know, it's as deep as you want it to be. And it's a very good
book.
That's
what a lot of people do with tattoos, man. They like take little nuggets of something that was really impactful for them, and then, you know, it's like I know that a lot of people get like different things like as like reminders.
Totally.
You know, so that's like really, really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd ever get words on me.
They'd have to be some really like cool words. And like I think I would want to write it, maybe. It'd have to be meaningful, because like I love writing. In fact, I wrote a lot of poems this week, like rap songs.
Oh, yeah.
And everything kind of starts as a poem and then maybe sometimes become sure. raps verses, but yeah, I wrote a lot because it's like so nice to clear your mind by writing. Like if you have a bad day or something traumatic happens in your life, tell the story of it to yourself. And don't think about anybody else reading it. It needs to be like honest, like you writing your thoughts. If that means that you're going to delete it immediately afterwards, then delete it immediately afterwards. But write it out honestly. And man, it can really be therapeutic for preventing you from replaying something. And sometimes things are so messed up that you just kind of don't know. And they're so big and unfathomable that you're like, how do I replay this? What parts? And they immediately default to the worst parts, and so you just end up replaying like the worst part of this trauma over and over. And in order to stop thinking about it, it kind of helps to write it out.
Yeah, I remember for a little while I was having trouble sleeping for a while. You just go through spells of it every now and then, and I was having trouble sleeping, and so what I started doing is like right before bed, I would longhand, I would write everything down that I was worried about.
Wow.
And I would sleep like a baby.
Yeah, dude.
Because it was just like, because somewhere in my mind, it was like, I was like, my brain would be like, oh, it's time to think about that. And I was like, no, I already wrote it down.
Right.
Like
cataloged.
It's written down. We'll deal with it tomorrow.
Totally.
Like,
it's kind of,
it definitely worked. Yeah. And it's just like packing it away for a little. It's like, there's something about writing stuff down where it's like, you've managed to put some things in order already, you know?
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is how the memory works when you're doing something like that too, because I find myself remembering details that I like remembered upon writing it, but starting it I didn't notice those details, and I'd be like, oh, I'm now remembering this happened there, and I'll like,
oh wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's weird to even like think that we have memories that we can't access, you know? Like,
well, it's like most of them.
Well, no, I mean, a lot of people think that your memory is like some camcorder, and if, like, if only you could access it, then you could see everything that is recording always, which is everything always, and that's like not how the memory works at all. It just doesn't have the bandwidth to store that sort of like detail, so it's just lots of times it'll be like, ah, I was in,
but is it like all in there?
What
is it all in there?
No, it's not. It's like it's your brain will be there? Like, okay, that room that we were waiting in, it was an office, I'm gonna fill it with officey stuff. And it just like fills it with officey stuff. There's some staplers, and like you will see actually a stapler in your mind's eye and remember it, but it may not be there because you were focused on something else. And your brain was like, I don't have the ability to record and catalog everything in this room, so I'm just going to be like generalized office.
Have you heard the theory that like most of your memories actually didn't happen the way that you're remembering them?
Dude, yeah, because every time you remember them, you're not remembering them. You're remembering the last time you remembered them. So you get farther and farther away.
Ah, it's so crazy because it's like I know that happened. I know it happened.
Dude.
But it's like, did it though? Or did it look like that?
Here's a great book that's not a storybook, that's a recommendation, called The Invisible Gorilla, which is a book that looks at, I think, five different like misnomers or lies.
Misconceptions
about how we think our brain works and how it actually works and what that means for your life. Some cool tools are kind of interwoven in there to help things like memory and how to look at things and not beat yourself up,
like pattern recognition and stuff like that.
Yeah, and maybe to be more empathetic towards other people. A lot of times we think people are doing things out of avarice when really it's like ignorance.
Yeah, what's the saying? It's like we judge ourselves by our actions and other people by... No, we judge ourselves by our intentions and other people by their actions.
Yeah, totally, totally. And many times they weren't thinking about you at all. And you're like, man, that person did that just to hurt me. And it's like, dude, no.
I know. I think people are thinking about me all the time. Like I'll go into a coffee shop or something.
One of the miss... I mean, people are. I'm thinking about you all the time. I'm replaying the track, baby.
Stop.
One of the misnomers in the book that it covers is the illusion of memory. And then there's like the illusion of focus, like attention, and then a few other illusions that are really interesting.
Yeah, I...
kind of blew my mind, actually.
I think about that in the sense of... like you ever watch like Bob Ross?
Yeah, love Bob Ross.
A lot of what he's talking about, like when he's painting, is he's just like, you want to give the illusion of this. Like you want to, like you're tricking other people's brains. Like you're tricking your brain.
Right.
You know? Like what you're actually doing is just, you're just scratching this paint onto this canvas. But like,
you're suggesting a tree. Let's suggest some trees over here.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like you didn't actually make plants.
Nor did you even depict them perfectly.
No, far from it, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like with the context of all the other things that you did and the method that you used to do it, your brain takes over the rest.
Yeah.
I was just watching this thing about a Rembrandt painting. I can't remember the title of it, but it's the one with like the guy in the armor in the front of it or whatever. Right. But there's like a bunch of people in the painting, and then there's like two figures that are in pillars of light. And then there are lines that Rembrandt drew or painted, like they're like weapons or like flags or whatever, and they're at specific angles to work in tandem with the light to draw your eye exactly where he wants you to look in the painting, you know. And it's just like, that's that. I mean, apart from that being true mastery of art, you know, and so much like self-awareness of what you're doing,
because he's adding the motion into a still photo, and knowing that he can't give you motion, so he makes you the motion. How cool is that?
It's so amazing.
So rad.
Yeah. I love learning about that kind of stuff.
Me too.
A lot of it is just, it's even like with reading too. I mean, like, if you're reading fantasy, like, we all know none of that's happening. You know what I mean? Like, obviously. Totally.
And yeah, we can suspend our disbelief in order to learn real life lessons from it and gain actual empathy and, you know, get.
And you can see it
totally
in your mind.
Totally.
Like, you know, I don't know if I take that back. Actually, I've read that quite a few people don't visualize the actual setting or scene.
That's very true. Do you hear words in your head when you read?
Kind of like so a good example is like me reading The Wheel of Time. I can't help but I get a little bit of Michael Kramer like the audiobook narrator.
Oh yeah.
Like it, like when I'm reading Wheel of Time with like my eyes,
you're it's like, just like Randolph the arm into the
I could totally hear it. Yeah, but like yeah, as a rule, like typically, like not really, I don't really sound anything out while I'm reading. I'm more like looking at like groups of words, if that makes sense.
Totally. Kind of flowing through it. Better if you can think in ideas, you can. But like as soon as you try to not think of words, you start thinking of words. And so it's one of those things that you're like, in order to be in the flow, I need to not notice the flow, kind of, which is an interesting kind of active book meditation.
Yeah, it's really interesting, like how we're able to kind of process like a bunch of random words that are put in a certain sequence that like not only process what's going on, but like somebody can put them in such an order that it draws an emotional reaction.
Totally. And there's a lot of filling in from the mind, like we were just talking about with painting, that's happening in writing as well. You can't describe every little thing, but you can use analogies and metaphors and blur an image that gives me the impression of something, so I get the idea and what you're trying to say without actually telling me, which is so wonderful.
Also, you can convey things without actually saying, and that's one of the, you know, that's one of the ways that people show instead of telling. You know, it's like if a guy is, if you write, he sat nervously at the bar, right? Like, that's not a very good sentence. Like, you could use it, you know, don't do whatever. But like, what would be way better is like, he sat at the bar tapping his fingers on the bar top.
That's so funny. I was going to say tapping his knee with sweat on his brow or something. Right, yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's like, you didn't say he was nervous, but your brain put that together. You know, and like that's where a lot of the fun is with reading, is like when it's written well enough that you're flowing through a scene, you can picture everything, or at least if you can't picture it, you're getting a very like a good idea of what's going on.
Yep.
Without them having to like come right out and tell you.
Right. And if you don't do that, you can get yourself into some kind of like what I consider to be like really cheeky writing, where it's just like, he said icily. Like it's just too many like just tell me, like you said, give me the layout of his body language. Give me a way of receiving the information about his emotional state without telling me he said something stonily or like something ridiculous like that. You know, I'm like,
I've been kind of easing up on adverbs a little bit. Like I used to just like, I would, if I accidentally wrote one, or if I thought I should write one, I just wouldn't, or I'd delete it.
Oh, no, no hard rules. No hard rules, I feel like.
Yeah, like, I mean, I just wrote one a little bit ago that it said, like, and she says, like, write. And then the dialogue tag is, she said slowly, because I wanted her to be like,
right.
But like, and I didn't, I was like, you know what? Let's just put slowly in there.
Totally.
You know,
it's, you can't just be like, with a sarcastic lilt.
Right.
Like,
I didn't want to do that.
This
yeah.
sounds stupid.
With a sarcastic lilt. No.
She said, turning it into one long sneer of a word.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's overkill for sure. Now I want to fit sarcastic lilt.
Sarcastic
that's awful.
Lilt.
What a mess of a sentence.
I know.
I hate that. Yeah. I don't know. I catch myself every now and then.
You know, I'm very aware of myself as I'm writing, in that I am kind of a cheesy writer, and that I don't find myself using little tags like that very much. I do try to show, not tell, though I am guilty of it, but I'm very like,
you write like Salvatore.
I write like Salvatore. Yeah. I write like, yeah, what I want to feel in an adventure story is how I try to like inject every sentence, and it gets a little like maybe basic, I guess is the right word, but like Chuck E. Cheesy. I don't know. And I don't really mind it, but I do totally get when someone's like, yeah, not for me. I'm like, yeah, no, I get you for sure. I'm very aware.
Though, man. I'm actually, I'm thinking about going to New York Comic Con this year, and R.A. Salvatore is going to be there.
In New York?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
I'm gonna fly over there and meet up with some book talker friends and go hang out there.
His high flying influencer buddies. Some big influencers, maybe some like people lots of followers and stuff.
Some big influencers.
Yeah, they're huge influencers. Content creators. Voices of the generation.
Yes, we prefer content creator, actually. Influencer is derogatory.
Is it?
No, I don't know.
Or janitor, if you want to be a dick about it.
All right, I think with that half-baked,
dude, man, when we get to half-baked references,
I think we're there. I think that's got to be it for us. I think we're done.
Wasn't there another question?
Oh my God, there was. Let's save it for next week.
Okay, let's save it for next week.
Like, it's, we're running long.
Now we know next week's episode is going to be good. Do we ever go into an episode thinking it's not going to be good? No, we don't.
They're all amazing. Every single podcast episode we've ever done is better than every podcast episode ever made that's not ours.
By anyone else, yeah.
Eat that, Joe Rogan.
Absolutely true, yeah.
Take that.
Me. Though I do find it really impressive that specifically with like Rogan is he does hours in a row and like he's not removing his ums or anything. Lot. That's amazing, you know?
Apparently they did just start
ums slicing.
Because I guess like some of... No, I mean, I guess they started not doing it live anymore, I heard. Because it was just getting like too off the rails. And totally. Like, you know, he was having some people on that were just like, oh, I got some stuff to say right. about it. And he's just like, whoa, oh my God. Like,
okay, I really don't get this. And we'll end here without going into this rabbit trail, this huge door I'm about to open. Of like, I really hate it when somebody has like a specialty in something that's like, I want to believe it, so I'm going to believe it. But then he starts off with like totally unrelated to whatever thing he's on the actual show to talk about and tell me all about. He's like, I'm also a remote viewer. Like if I hear that at the beginning, I just can't get on board for the rest of it. And I'm not even convinced remote viewing isn't a thing. I just when I hear someone say that they're that thing, I'm like, I'm out.
I stopped listening to Rogan like years ago because I felt like he was kind of like this just kind of almost Howard Stern, like Larry King type, kind of like, I'm just going to sit here and like have this person, this interesting person on and just like ask them leading questions.
Right, that, just then try to be stupid.
But like, I don't know. I feel like over the years, it's just like, it's become this thing where it's like, I feel like he almost just, he's like super rich. He's getting older and he's just like, we should talk about like trans people. And it's like, it's not even like why they had anybody on or anything. You know what I mean? And it's just, I feel like he really wants to direct the conversation into things that he's like either annoyed about or like, he's just gotten like crotchety.
There's
you know?
Ways like it gets a little bit like
I'm almost over it.
You like, dude, I feel you completely. Yeah. It gets a little bit like annoying when someone who like you used to have on for the really, I liked him because he just said really open-ended leading questions. He pretended he was dumb and asked the expert questions, and I got to hear the expert, which I liked.
Yeah.
But now, you're right, he does take a lot of opportunities to be like, go on these little like rants about, but isn't it frustrating that we can't do this? It's like, well, you're actually kind of like, doing that right now, and you're the biggest of the thing. So it's like a car company being like, isn't it so frustrating that we all have to have four-wheeled cars? Like, you're the one making the four-wheeled cars. Leading the charge there, Fig Bella, but you know, it is what it is. I don't hit up Rogan too often, but even a lot of other ones. They're just a lot of remote viewers are in the content that I like to listen to. And man, it really does nothing for my opinion of their knowledge about insert pretty much anything besides remote viewing.
I like the Marc Maron podcast, WTF. That one's pretty good. I like Call Her Daddy a lot.
Yeah.
Call Her Daddy's a really, that's an awesome podcast. Yeah, that one's good.
A partner of mine was very good friends with one of the girls from Call Her Daddy podcast. Went to college with her.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that podcast a lot. One of my favorite ones is An Oral History of the Office by Brian Baumgartner, the person that plays Kevin. So it's like he goes through like from the very beginning of like how they started like adapting it from the British show and like how they were just kind of like the underdog TV show for a while until
everyone realized it's better than the original.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I still to this day have never watched the British Office.
Dude, it feels like a perversion. You're like, what? Because it's like,
careful. There's British people.
It only feels that way because I've watched so many episodes of the actual Office. So like, I even said it, the actual Office. It's like the other one was first. But when you look, because I've watched the other one, the one with that we all know and love, so much that when I watched the British one, I'm like, this is wrong.
It's not right.
Yeah, this is wrong.
But like, it is. But that's the one though.
I know. Well. Like many things that other countries have made, sometimes we come along and take it and make it better. Sometimes we make it way worse, too. But that one thing we did make better.
According to us.
To me, to me and only me on a very subjective opinion thing. I think it's objectively according to the better. People I'll throw that out there. Let's go fight in the Discord, guys. All right.
All right, cool. Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to go read Wheel of Time, probably.
I'm going to very happily finish me some Goblin Emperor.
Cool. Well, everybody, thank you so much for listening to our Monday episode. And
Tuesday episode.
Try to get some Tuesday episode, the Tuesday morning minute. Yeah, everybody, we'll have an episode out on time next week for you. Hopefully a Throne of Glass episode soon. We'll get to Malazan. We'll just keep cruising along.
Dude, you know? Books and books, and they're so much better consumed with a buddy. So go pop into that Discord.
They really are. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Hope you have an amazing rest of your day. And of course, happy reading.
Bye, everybody.